We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Today's episode, we're previewing the Boston Red Sox with Chad Jennings. Chad has been a friend of the pod for many years. He's been on the show to preview the Red Sox a number of times, so I'm always appreciative of Chad's time. And it's going to be an interesting year for the Red Sox as we get into. A lot of people are writing them off this year, but there's also the bitter and jaded Yankees fans that remember the seasons in which the Red Sox should have been terrible, and then they surprise everybody and have a good season with a collection of misfit toys. And let's hope that's not the 2023 Red Sox, because the division is going to be difficult enough as it is. But before we get into the episode, I want to tell you guys about Shady Rays. They're an amazing sunglasses company that offers a world-class product that's just as good as any expensive pair you can find. The frames are durable, the lenses have extremely clear optics, which are perfect for outdoor activities, golf, beach, and of course, baseball games. I told this story the other day on the show, but I saw a ton of Shady Rays ski goggles as well when I was skiing, which opened my eyes that they're not just about sunglasses, which is pretty cool. And of course, if you've owned a pair of sunglasses in the past, you've probably broken or lost them. I remember one of the first expensive pairs of sunglasses I ever owned. I was on my friend's boat and my hat was flying off my head from the wind. I reached up to grab it. I knocked the sunglasses off my head and they fell in the ocean, and there's, you know, whatever, $150 down the drain. With Shady Rays, you do not have to worry about that, because they will send you a new pair if you lose or break them, no questions asked. And if you buy a pair, you can exchange them for free within 30 days of purchase if you don't like them for whatever reason. That is just an awesome perk to the company and confidence when you're buying. Shady Rays is giving their best deal to our listeners. Go to ShadyRays.com and use promo code Bronx for 50% off two pairs or more of polarized sunglasses. Again, code Bronx for 50% off two or more pairs at ShadyRays.com. Go check them out. I know you are going to love them.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
Okay, very happy to bring on to the show now Chad Jennings of The Athletic. Covers the Boston Red Sox, has joined us probably like each of the last 4 or 5 years to preview the Red Sox. Used to be covering the Yankees way back in the day. You might recognize his name from that if you've been a longtime social media and Yankees follower. But Chad, welcome back.
Hey, nice to be back.
Yeah, so the Red Sox.
Do you know what to make of the Red Sox?
I do not. So there's two camps that I've noticed of Yankees fans, at least, how they're viewing the Red Sox. Number one is the team is bad. They're going to be bad. They're going to be a last place team. Let's not worry about them.
Yep. And do they all live in Boston? Is that the whole, like, yeah, that is sort of, I think, the overriding feeling here. So I'm curious what the other perspective on them is.
Number two is, we've seen this before where everyone writes them off, like 2013, 10 years ago, they're just collection of these veterans that all of a sudden they win a World Series. Mm-hmm. I don't think that is this team. I think in hindsight that 2013 had a lot of talent, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you tell me what's going on with the team this year.
Well, so, you know, look, I look at the lineup right now. It could be good. I mean, it's, even the projections have them at basically the same offense they had last year, and the offense they had last year was enough. You know, that they were what, fourth or fifth or something in the AL and OPS last year. Like, not,
fourth,
I mean, certainly not.
Fourth in runs scored.
So, yeah, run, yeah. Yeah. Like, they're not, like, you know, not some juggernaut, but certainly an offense capable of making the playoffs. And I think they're similar with that this year. I mean, there's some X factors in it with Duvall playing center and Kike at short. And, like, you know, when are they going to get Story back? And, you know, how many games do they get out of him and all that? So there are a lot. I mean, there are more question marks probably. But, you know, I mean, there's also some pretty upside X factors too, right, with Tristan Casas and Masataka Yoshida. And, you know, how is, you know, Justin Turner going to play at Fenway Park, that sort of thing. You know, I think the offense is okay. The huge thing that I don't think anyone can predict is what this pitching staff is. I mean, it is a weird collection of people, right? It's almost bizarre.
I was looking at the names and I couldn't believe some of them.
Like how did it even come together? Like, I mean, yeah. I watched it happen. I covered this pitching staff coming together, and I still am like, how did they end up with this group? And look, again, you can look at it and see how it can work, right? I mean, and not
that's a lot of ifs.
It doesn't have to work by Chris Sale winning the Cy Young Award, but, it, you know, is Sale reasonably good? Is Garrett Whitlock going to be pretty good as a starter? He doesn't have to be the dominant reliever that moves in and stays that dominant in the rotation. Is Brian Bayo, like, going to be legit? And is Corey Kluber going to at least be, like, a solid number three, four? I mean, it's unbelievable to me that they have a rotation of loaded with guys who you're like, I mean, I see it, right? Like, you don't have to, like, squint to see what there is to like about some of these guys. It's just that you got to squint on, like, every single one of them, which is so weird. There's just not a reliable, like, who's going to lead the Red Sox in innings pitched this year? I have no idea. I think there are, like, six guys.
Pavetta. I would bet on Pavetta, probably.
Sure. Safest bet there is. Also, might be in the bullpen in a week and a half.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, really? Like, when Garrett Whitlock's back and Brian Bayo's back, and if Paxton comes back, like, he may be in the pen by the end of April. But he's also the most reliable source of innings. So
He made 33 starts last year.
Yeah, he's made 30 starts the last 2 years. So he's easily the most reliable source of innings. And I still have no idea what they're going to ultimately do with him. Like, it's such a strange pitching staff. And, you know, they did work to make the bullpen better. The bullpen was a wreck at times last year. And, you know, not that Kinley is vintage Mo, or not that he's even vintage Kinley, but, like, that's a better closer situation than you've had the last couple of years. Chris Martin is, you know, interesting, throws a ton of strikes. They think they found something in Schreiber last year. They believe that there's a lot of good stuff under the hood on Brazier. They get Joely. They get Richard Blyer, old friend Richard Blyer.
Mm-hmm. Old friend Joely, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, true. But, you know, there's a – again, you can see how it works. You can see how it can work. It's just, good night. It could also fall apart. It could fall apart by May 1st.
Yeah, when you have that many question marks in a pitching staff, and specifically in a starting rotation, I just don't see how it's going to work. Like, yeah. I leave open the possibility that it could. And if they score a boatload of runs and half of the rotation is solid, like, fine. They'll be competitive, especially because, number one, the balanced schedule, I think, is going to make, you know, a little bit easier for a team like the Red Sox. And mm-hmm. number two, the expanded playoffs. Like, you could be playing meaningful games in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, you're going up and down. It's like Chris Sale also just, like, has had so many injuries and so many setbacks. And, like, I believe that's the reason he's not starting opening day, right?
They sort of also felt like it was going to – it's his birthday. Opening day is his birthday. And I believe – I'd have to double check it. I think it's also, like, the anniversary of his Tommy John. And their feeling was, like, just what? Like, seriously. And this is what they've said, is, like, it just felt like it's going to be a lot. Like,
what?
Just take it easy.
His birthday?
Let Kluber do it. And then, I don't know. I mean, I don't think, ultimately, this is all, like, sort of nonsense, right? It's like, whatever. It's just the way it all lines up. But that's part of what they talked about. But clearly, they're hoping that he's the number one, right?
Like, of course.
So, you know, I don't know. Funny. It's a little bit of, you know, are they overthinking this? Are they underthinking it? What is this? But again, it just goes back to, like, they felt like there's a lot going on. At least that's what they've said. And so, let's Sale have a day. get yourself like not freaked out and then let's go.
Does he make a big deal about his birthday? Because I don't know if you're like, I haven't cared about a birthday since 21.
My birthday's on Christmas Day. I haven't cared about my birthday since I was 10.
That's a tough one. That's definitely a tough one.
But no, I don't know. That was just their, that's the logic that they said of why isn't sales starting is just, it's just whatever. Like, don't make a big deal out of this and let's just,
I'm sure the
Boston, you have Corey Kluber.
I'm sure the Boston fans are having a field day with that.
Oh, God. Dude, with everything right now. I wrote a thing about, I can't remember which story it was, but in it, there was, I quoted Haim. And he used the word cool like two or three times in this, like, you know, it'd be cool if they did this. And then I think it'll be, and that became a thing of like, this guy uses the word cool so much. It'd be really cool. Like, that's how much everyone hates everything right now. Like,
I know.
Even just like nitpicking on the choice of a word in a quote, it's reached that point. There is nothing that happens now.
What do you think that's stemming from?
It's starting with Mookie. Right. I mean, it's all from there. It's they brought in the guy from Tampa and everyone was terrified that he was going to come in and make them a low spending team. And then he traded Mookie. And then it was just like immediately like, all right, we know who this guy is and we know how this is going to go.
Completely.
I mean,
like Verdugo's still there, obviously, but Jeter Downs was like the number one prospect they got from that, right? And he was a bust. So it's
Jeter Downs didn't work out has been a big setback, right? Like you make this huge trade with Mookie, and look, there was logic to it. I mean, they'd already decided there's nothing we can do to keep this guy from going to free agency, and so. If you feel like there's nothing you can do to keep him from going to free agency, and you also feel like your farm system is a wreck and that you're tied to a lot of pretty rough contracts, their thinking was, right or wrong, we're going to have to do one of these resets like the Tigers have done, or like, you know, the teams that have, you know, been sort of pretty decent playoff teams for a few years, and then they go through like a 5-year reset. Then they're like, well, instead of doing that, let's try to get proactive. Do this. And then you've seen what they've done the last 3 years, right? It's like, instead of just tanking, we're clearly resetting. And then we're also going to sign a bunch of 1 or 2 year deals to keep us from being a total mess. And every once in a while, when you do that, you get 2021, right? Like all of a sudden you're not like the favorite, but you're pretty good and some things play out. And so I think that we're still in a little bit of that cycle, right? The Trevor Story signing was maybe a sign that they were starting to try to think bigger, and they think they've got this wave coming, right? Brian Bayo, Tristan Casas, you know, maybe at some point this kid Sadon Rafaela could be playing center. They think they've got stuff coming, Marcelo Mayer a few years down the road, but I think that they're looking at it still in that they're somewhere in the middle of, you know, we're still kind of resetting here, but if you can put enough pieces around that can work, 2021 can happen. Doesn't work, 2022 happens. You know,
I was looking up as you were just saying, where does their farm system rank? 16th in baseball on MLB.com. So middle of the pack.
Baseball America has them 10, but Baseball America also counts Yoshida.
That's I want to talk about that in a second. Like, so it's like the Mookie trade, which we've talked about, and the fallout from that, and then the decision to also let Bogarts go to free agency. Mm-hmm. And another thing we talked about last year, I think it was last year, was that they signed Story as insurance potentially for when Bogarts goes to free agency.
A little bit.
But then on the flip side, they give Devers the massive extension. So it's like, okay, out of the big three, Mookie, Bogarts, Devers, he's the guy. Devers is the guy that gets the extension. Great player, obviously. Yeah, maybe the best guy of all those three to give the extension to, considering his age and position. But like, the Red Sox could pay all three. And so like, isn't that what fans are like, hey, guys, you could pay all three if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think that's certainly what people want to be true. I don't know how much they actually feel like that is true. And you're seeing it, you know, look, right now we're seeing the Mets and the Phillies and the Padres. The
Padres paid all three.
Go to places that we've never seen teams go. But, you know, you're also seeing the Dodgers not bring back some of their guys. You see Houston not bring back some of their guys. You know, like it's not. So I don't know. Could they play all three? Of course. John Henry has an absurd amount of money. They can. But But I don't know that outside of what's happened here in the last two or three years, you'd actually go like, oh, the norm is even these big spending teams can sign the massive open market extensions for three of the like premier sure. superstars in the game. It just, so I think they were trying to think about it logically in that way. And they certainly picked their battle with Devers. Bogarts, I think they thought they were going to sign it. I don't think they
what
thought
was
the
their,
market
what was their go. Top offer to him?
Well, it was something like six and what was it, 160 or 170?
Okay, but not even in the realm.
Yeah, but if you're getting, but if you're offering that, I think you're willing to go to like 7 and 200. And that's about what we thought he would get, right? He'll get about 200 million. And I think they were probably willing to go there. But then when the market becomes the Padres are going to give him 11 years, they're not going to do that. So I do think, and look, there is an argument to be made that the Red Sox, if you're the Red Sox, you should be able to go screw it. If that's what it takes to keep Xander Bogaerts, we just have to do it. And I think that's a fair argument to make, right? But there is certainly a lot of logic in saying, sorry, we just don't want to lock up our shortstop until he's 41 years old.
You know? And I get that. And probably given the current state of the roster, that actually does make sense. But then why the Devers extension?
Because they signed Devers through age 36.
That's
like,
true.
You're not, I mean, there's not like, there's not remotely the downside, right? Like
it wasn't
this
a reaction.
This may be a Jeter deal, right? Like Jeter's first extension with the Reds or with the Yankees, right? Like
awesome.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And ends at roughly the same time, right? I think that's sort of why they're seeing Devers lined up, right? Age-wise, I mean, look, it's the biggest contract the Red Sox have ever given. They're willing
because
to spend
had
money.
Previously but... signed a kind of big extension with the Red Sox, right? Like
Devers? No.
Not Devers. Bogarts had previously
Bogarts
signed.
Yeah. Bogarts leading into 19? He had signed
an extension. He had already been making 20-something million bucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and then, so he opted out of that this offseason.
Got it.
And then that's when he hit free agency. I mean, I think it makes sense to have made Devers be the guy. But in terms of why is there such negativity here around what they're doing is, I mean, look, they've been last place, made a good run at the playoffs, and then last place again. And this sense of like, what are we doing? They've also made some other moves that are, you know, it almost felt like trying to get too creative, right? Trade Hunter Renfroe and bring back Jackie.
Yeah.
Even though at the time, I actually thought that move kind of made some sense. But then Jackie's awful and Renfroe hits whatever he hit, 35 homers again.
And it's like then you've got the Story injury, which certainly isn't helping things. And like what is happening at shortstop right now? Like that seems to be a massive problem for at least the first half of the season.
Yeah, I think so. I think Kike's probably a better shortstop than we realize, right? Like he's probably a pretty decent defender over there, but I don't know, man. I don't think he's going to hit like he did in the second half of 21. And then there's a trickle down from that, right? Like if you've got to move Hernandez to short, now you've got to go out and get Adam Duvall to play center. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, metrics say he's pretty good out there, but he's also 34 years old and a left fielder. So it's a little bit strange.
Yeah. Yoshida, where's he going to be playing?
Yoshida's in left.
Okay.
Verdugo's interesting. Yeah. Verdugo's going to move to right. Yeah.
The Yoshida signing, obviously, everyone criticized them for overpayment. And I guess it does seem like an overpayment for him. But what does he project to be as a major league hitter?
Yeah. So here's the way Yoshida was described to me. They think his most likely scenario is he's Andrew Benintendi. Right. Okay. Like Benintendi got
75
and they gave him 90. Okay. So an overpay if he's Benintendi. Their argument though is that there's so much that they think there's considerably more upside to Yoshida. They'd rather pay the extra money to get a guy who, if his power does translate, because he hit for power in Japan and there has been, and I think a lot of teams that were down on him don't think the power is going to translate. And they think he's coming over as a contact hitter who's not going to hit many home runs. And that's Benintendi. But if it does come and they really believe in it and have clearly bought into it, now maybe you've got an impact guy, you know, in the middle of the order and that's a bigger. So is it an overpay? I mean, it might be, but I also think there's a chance you know, we'll see. I have no idea which it'll be.
Turns out to be.
But if he hits 30 homers, then I think we're going to look back, or even 25 home runs, I think we're going to look back at it and go like, well, geez, of all the corner outfielders who were out there this winter, that might have been the best one other than Aaron Judge, right? So
of course, if he turns out to be a, you know, call it a 125 OPS corner outfielder or something like that, then you love that signing. And so, you know,
what, so that's what I'm saying. That's the idea of Yoshida, right? Is that there is at least you're banking on a floor of a pretty decent corner outfielder, with the wild card here is like the ceiling is considerably higher than I think a lot of the guys who were out there.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
And so you can sort of talk yourself into the lineup, as you've been saying. Mm-hmm. You can talk yourself into the lineup being really competitive, and then it's the pitching staff. I look at the rest of the division, and even the Orioles, I feel like, have a higher floor than the Red Sox. Maybe they don't have a higher ceiling than the Red Sox, but I think they might have a higher floor than the Red Sox. And the top three teams in the division, I think, are all far and away better. So I think going... You know, another reason why it's harder to talk yourself into the Red Sox having a competitive year is that it's not a wide open division.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it's going to be, it's hard. You know, I mean, that's at one point, I think it was this winter, right? That Chaim Bloom said to me, he said, I think we're playing in the best, we may be playing in the best division in the history of baseball right now, right?
Yeah, I mean possibly.
I mean, there's a good chance certainly all five teams believe they have a winning record, right? And with reason. And then it's like, I mean, and all five of them may even have like legitimate playoff hopes. You know, I don't know.
Three of those teams, their goal is to win the World Series.
Two are great. And the Rays are the Rays.
Never sleep on them. We talked about this last year.
And then you've got these other two teams, which the Red Sox and Orioles, for two kind of different reasons, are these sort of X factor wild card teams that could be interesting or could be not interesting.
Right. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, it's like in the pitching staff, Kluber, Sale, Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, Nick Pivetta, Paxton. When is Paxton coming back from injury?
Paxton's probably like the end of April. They've got him in waves right now. It looks like it's going to be second turn through the rotation is when they get Garrett Whitlock back. Third turn through the rotation is when they get Garrett Whitlock back. He can come back in game 11. And then the next turn through the rotation, they'll probably get Brian Baio back. And the next turn through the rotation, they probably get James Paxton back. That's kind of how they're stacked up right now.
Is there a scenario in which the Red Sox don't get off to a good start and pieces are traded off of this roster? Or is that not even really?
No, I mean, well, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know how early, right? Like,
you're talking in, you know,
but I mean, like,
a month out of the deadline. Selling?
Totally. Yeah. I think they would do that. You know, I mean, they sold heavy in 20. They sold semi in 20 last year, certainly didn't buy. I mean, I think they would be willing to blow it up. I mean, that's why they've got a bunch of 1-year deals here, right?
I guess that's the flexibility of signing 1 and 2 year contracts, mm-hmm. is every year you can just sort of readjust the roster, roll the dice until the farm system produces the core of talent.
And they think the farm system is going to be more productive than they're getting credit for, because they think they've graduated some guys. And of course, but I mean, everybody thinks that, but But, you know, look, we started talking about Mookie Betts, right? Like that. So if Jeter Downs works out, if he's even close to what he was made out to be, the middle infield situation is totally different. Even if he's not your everyday shortstop, maybe he's at least at second base, right? And now you've got Arroyo in more of a utility role, which is probably better for him, and which means you could put Kike in center field more often. Like Jeter Downs not working out has messed up this timetable. Jaron Duran having these like wild ups and downs and not being consistent enough in center field has also created some of the problem, right? And so they've given up on Downs, right? They DFA'd him and yep. let him go. They still think that Duran can be pretty good, but we'll have to see. I mean, obviously they didn't even put him on the opening day roster, so like how much do you really believe in it? But we'll see. I mean, there are those factors at play here while they're waiting for the sort of super high ceiling of Marcelo Mayer to come up.
Do you get a sense John Henry will get impatient? Because he's done that before where like they've had a plan and then they've pivoted to just signing a bunch of guys. Obviously he has the money to do it. So,
well, he's pivoted the other way, right? Like, I mean, since Theo, it was like, I think it was 4 years of Ben Cherington doing the like build from within thing and they win a championship and then it didn't work. And you're like, oh no, it's not working. And then almost panic move. Let's bring in Dombrowski to do the totally other thing. Yep. He does exactly what Dave Dombrowski does, exactly what he was hired to do. And 1 year after he wins the World Series, you go, oh no, he's only getting us major league players. We got to make a move. And then you get rid of him and bring in Heim. And now we're 4 years into Heim. So totally. I mean, you could see it being like, well, all right, we tried this, but this just isn't working. I mean, look, I think ownership is on board with this. I mean, I think he's doing things that they want him to do. That's, you know, I tried to actually talk to guys about this at one point, but talking like on Xander, in my mind, it's Heim Bloom's job to come to them and go, look, this doesn't make sense. My professional opinion as your head of baseball operations is you shouldn't sign this guy to 41 until he's 41.
Yep.
If you want to do that deal, it has to be ownership going, you're right. It's our money though, and we want Xander Bogaerts to be here. So I don't know that how much you can just put it squarely on Heim for trying to do smart baseball things in a world in which every once in a while you have to be Hal Steinbrenner going, screw it, I'm giving Aaron Judge this much money.
Exactly. Brian Cashman even said that in a press conference last October or November, where he said there's certain decisions that are ownership questions, not of general course. Manager.
Yeah, questions. Yeah. I mean, at some point it gets past that. You just, your baseball people have to tell you, look, here's what we think is smart and here's the way we'd like to do it. And then if you want to blow past that, which some teams are doing right now, you know, I mean, some of what the Mets are doing is not Billy Epler.
No.
You know what I mean? So I think they're all sort of in this whole world together. Now, does someone take the fall if it doesn't work again? Sure.
I think
you could see that.
Where do you put decisions like possibly overpaying for Yoshida or possibly giving Jensen a year more than he's going to get on the open market? Is that Bloom?
Yeah, I think that's mostly Bloom.
Valuing players that maybe other guys are not valuing, thinking he's got you know, a read on something.
Yeah, well, I think with Yoshida, it was a read on this is the corner outfield market. We're not in play for Judge. So now you're looking at, again, it's Benintendi, it's Joey Gallo, it's Mitch Haniger, it's a bunch of guys with warts and with questions and going, all right, my logic is we're going to go for this guy. And, you know, ownership says, all right, that's your choice. Like, I think that's on them. With Kenley, that felt more like, and I know that was, we tried to get more starting pitching. The market for starters went way past what we were comfortable doing. And they lost out on some guys in sort of some like bad luck situations. Zach Eflin, Nate Eovaldi, some other factors kind of screwed up those pursuits. And then they just went, well, all right, we have Tanner Houck, we have Garrett Whitlock, who we can use as starters instead of relievers. Let's build up the bullpen then. And so then they went, instead of, you know, making a 4-year commitment maybe to a starting pitcher they didn't want, they'll make a 2-year commitment to a closer when you don't, you know, maybe that's a little bit past your comfort zone, but at least you're not tied to him, you know, for 3 or 4 years. It's two,
right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the difference between 1 and 2 years is not crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, it goes back to like what we were talking about in the beginning, right? Like, should that really matter for a team like the Red Sox? If you think he's going to be good this year and right. you're tied to one more year past what you'd like. Like you guys, Red Sox should be able to withstand that
for sure.
And so I think that was sort of a, again, look, these guys are smart. I mean, they are, you know, Cashman and his guys are smart. The people here are smart. They're making decisions that are logical, but sometimes the logic, you know, if you could talk yourself out of a move too, that you need, right? Because if you try to logic all of it, you end up sometimes in some rough spots.
Yeah. All right. Before we wrap up, question I've been asking all of the guys we've been doing previews with is, what rule changes are you looking forward to most this year?
No, the pitch clock. You kidding me? I'm going to be home by 10:30.
That's the unanimous answer of everybody.
You know what? You know what's funny to me though? It's the one that I dismissed the most in the offseason. I was like, I mean, the only part of the pitch clock that I really took into account was the pickoff thing, because I was like, oh yeah, man, guys are going to, it's going to be really interesting. Guys running so much and all the shift changes are going to totally change the way hitters approach it. And by the way, pitchers are going to have to learn to pitch a little faster, but whatever. And then you get to spring training, it was like, oh God, it is way different. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, because I haven't, it's not like I was watching a ton of minor league games last year and had any real sense of that pace. And,
well, you know, because you can see the game
changes stuff.
I mean, you can see the numbers, right? Oh, it's cutting off X minutes of time. But until you actually see the difference, mm-hmm. like watching a game and the amount of pause that it takes out is when you really feel the difference.
Well, and I know this has been said before. I'm not like breaking something here, but I remember Brian Bannister, who used to be with the Red Sox, told me once that part of the reason it slowed down is these hitters are so good now. Pitchers have to throw like the best pitch they have every time. And so they're throwing, you know, you throw 99 and now they're taking an extra second because they need the next pitch to be 99 too, you know, or they need that next follow-up breaking ball. There is no get me over anymore. So it's just, and now that's going to make pitchers, you know, not only is it speeding it up, but you are seeing it change the way guys have to approach hitters, because they don't have time to get off like the perfect slider every time anymore. You know, it's going to change it a lot.
Hitters also, I mean, are not absolved of anything, because they take a lot of time in between pitches too. And it's 100%. Like the update that the umpire can grant extra time if a guy takes a big swing. It's like, okay, so, you know, we already know where that is going.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Offense, baby.
Yeah.
Give them a chance to hit.
Yeah.
I said at the, remember the early in spring, the Red Sox had the game that ended with a violation.
Yeah. Yep.
And I said something to somebody in the front, I can't remember now who. And I was like, I said, you know, once we get into the season, they'll probably, right, in those situations, they're going to give them a little bit of leeway. And he goes, I mean, if that's the rule and the other team gets a little bit of leeway just because the game's on the line, I'm going to be pissed. Like,
exactly.
I mean, you can't, and he was right. Like, if this is the rule, this is going to be the rule. When
there's literally a clock, we're not talking about a strike zone, or we're not talking about pass interference where there's a judgment involved. Right. Like, this is literally, that says zero. I know what that means.
I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad they did it.
Give me my strike, you know?
But I'm glad they did it in spring training. Like, we talked about this on the show. I talked about it with Scott. Like, do it in spring training. The game doesn't actually mean anything. Condition these players to that we're going to call this. And then maybe that has the ripple effect down the road where it's not an issue anymore.
Oh, I think that Major League Baseball, when that game ended on a violation, I think Major League Baseball was thrilled.
Yeah.
Because as much as it was weird, it was also a good wake up to everyone of like, yeah, man, pay attention. we're doing this. This is happening.
The real thing will be, though, it's like, you know, Game 6 of the ALCS.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I heard someone say like they should either eliminate it or something in the ninth inning of a 3-run game. And
that's an interesting take on it. Like a close game after the seventh inning, maybe you extend the clock or do something different.
And look, I can understand why people would be like, "Hey, look, man, the rule is the rule." But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like the ghost runner in extra innings.
Right,
rule,
exactly.
Right?
I have no problem with the ghost runner in extra innings for a July baseball game. Right. I have a problem with it for an October baseball game.
Yeah.
And I would feel the same way about the pitch clock timing.
Yeah, and to me, the best argument for it was whoever it was that put together all the numbers on the Ohtani Trout at bat in the WBC, and that, like, I don't even, maybe even all the pitches would have been violations. And like, oh, right. Yeah, nobody was bothered by it. You know what I mean? Like, it's so, I don't know. I hope that some.
But when it's Nick Pavetta pitching to Gleyber Torres in the third inning of a game, you're like,
hey, yeah, even Gleyber Torres is bored. You know what I mean? Like, let's go. Yeah. I don't know. I have heard from and talked to a lot of like, you know, old school baseball people who are still very bothered by it. And, you know, how this, you're not giving the guy time to recalibrate and think. I'm like, yeah, dude, I don't. Sorry, man. We play 162 of these. I don't need you to take that.
It was time. Yeah. It was like when the thing. It's like, you know, I try to watch almost every baseball game. You have to watch every baseball game. It's like 9:48 at night, and it's the bottom of the sixth inning. You're like, God damn, come on.
What guys. Are we doing? Yeah. Well, and that's how you're going to get people tuning out. Though we did a story.
I don't blame
about
people.
Broadcasters. Like, and how they've been adjusting to it, and one of them. Wayne Randazzo out in LA now, he said one thing he noticed in spring training, it's going faster. And when games are over, people are hanging around a little bit in the park, right? Like they're not sprinting to the exits because the game finally ended. It's like they've been entertained. They saw it. It happened in 2.5 hours. Now, man, maybe they're going to hang about and kind of talk a little bit. Like this wasn't something that you were counting down. Like, oh God, finally they got through this thing, you know, like, I don't know. I really think it's going to help.
And that's ultimately a good thing for the sport. Like everyone should be in agreement. That's a good thing for the sport.
And coming off of the WBC, that was like this,
right?
Unlike any WBC we've ever seen, where it was like all of a sudden all eyes were on baseball and it was incredible. Now you maybe if you've got, to, you know, did you hook a couple of kids and they're like, oh, all right, I'm going to try to watch a few more games this year. Like, give them a product that's fun. I mean, I watch Celtics games with my 6-year-old, and I mean, he is super into it all of a sudden.
Oh, wow.
But I have, and now he's gotten old enough, right, to be able to watch it, and he's like pretending to play basketball in our living room while we're doing it. But I'm curious, and now in the past, when I've tried to watch baseball with him, he's sort of into it, and he gets bored pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
And I don't always have a great counter argument. I'm not like, no, look, see how trust the catcher's setting up and the pitcher thinking about it? Yeah. This is riveting.
You see, when he stepped off the mound for the third time there, that's because
that's an athlete. That's what you need to be watching, son. Yeah. Man, make it, I don't want to take anything away from people who are bothered by it because, there are some quirks here that we've gotten used to and it's going to be a change. But I do think the net's going to be, it's so much better.
I'm with you. All right, Chad. Thank you. So much fun as always. Go check out Chad in The Athletic. He writes awesome stories, and hopefully we'll catch up with you down the road this season.
Sounds good. Anytime. Let me know.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.